Hey, Colin here. We just launched our Patreon, so if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/Colin Stuckert. That's patreon.com/ColinStuckert. We will have exclusive updates coming. It will also give us more opportunities to invest more in the show and release more shows. Some other bonuses with the different tiers. Check it out over at patreon.com, and thank you for your support. Another way that you can support the show is you can head over to Wild Foods and use code AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order of real food, superfood, supplements, and ingredients. These are products that I've been using myself in my daily life for years. I recommend checking out our fish oil and our collagen, and also make sure you check out the Co-Tropic. It's one of my favorite products. Cocoa, mushrooms, delicious. Head over to wildfoods.co and use AMPODCAST12 for 12% off your entire order.
Do you remember PE in school? You probably loved it or hated it, but you probably never thought you wanted a diet that was based around it, right? Well, we are going to be talking to Ted Naiman today, and he is the founder and author of the PE diet, and we're going to find out exactly what that means. And spoiler alert, it has nothing to do with physical education. I just thought I would throw that on there. Nope, this book and this way of life is about the relationship of protein and energy. And if you've been wondering if you have too much protein or not enough protein in your diet, this is the episode for you. Stick around, and we are going to get to the bottom of it with Colin, Brent, and Ted Naiman right now. So here we are. Welcome to the show, Ted Naiman. Thank you for coming on The Ancestral Mind.
Oh, Brent and Colin, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
All right, I'm going to kick it off, Brent. I got a lot. I got to be careful not to make this a personal session for myself because there's so many questions I want to ask. So I'm going to try to make it applicable to our audience. But I think all the things that I'm interested in, our audience is going to be interested as well. And so the big thing that you see a lot, I've seen you on Bigger Stronger podcast with, was it Bell, Mark Bell, and then Saladino. You guys kind of had like a friendly debate on like more fat, less fat protein or not. So why don't you give us just an intro to the PE diet, and then we'll kind of like just see where that goes from there.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. So I wrote this crazy book called The PE Diet, and I'm basically looking at food by comparing the amount of protein and minerals and nutrients in food versus the amount of just energy, which is high energy carbon bonds from carbohydrates or hydrocarbons, which are fats. So I kind of split your food into protein minerals, which come from the soil that plants grow in, versus carbs and fats, which is solar energy stored as chemical energy by plants. So if you kind of break all your food down into this protein versus energy mindset, it's kind of easy to see where we went wrong with, you know, first of all, agriculture, where we basically domesticated animals and fattened them up to get more energy, and we domesticated plants and just siphoned off all the sugar to get more energy. And you can see where we just massively accelerated the energy side of the equation with agriculture and the Industrial Revolution and the bulk refining and processing of sugar, flour, and oil. And then you can kind of see where we diluted the hell out of all the protein and minerals and nutrients in the human food supply with basically refined carbs and refined fats. And then next thing you know, everybody's obese and has too much energy inside their body, which is what insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, and everything else is. So I kind of split eating into energy, which we've sort of overdone in the past, 10,000 years. Massively accelerated in the past like 200. And then we have to eat until we get enough protein and nutrients, but in the process, we're massively overeating energy. So I just kind of wrote this book looking at it from that angle because I thought that would be, unique or different or useful or whatever. And that's kind of the direction I'm coming at it from.
Okay, so this dilution, this protein dilution is interesting. This might be a good place to kind of start, I think, and tell the story. And then real quick, so when you say energy, you're kind of, for simplicity, we're saying carbs and fat, right? Versus protein, which is more, so how you define protein exactly?
So basically protein is centered around a nitrogen, and that's kind of what differentiates protein. Humans seem to be able to burn carbs or fats pretty readily, either one, and we're basically just splitting apart these high energy carbon-carbon and carbon-hydrogen bonds in our mitochondria. That's where we get every single bit of energy to be alive. And that's really all directly from the sun. So plants convert solar energy into these high energy carbon-carbon bonds that we're then breaking in our mitochondria to get all our energy. But everything else that your body's made out of is different. It's mostly a couple dozen elements in mineral form that plants absorb from the soil. So all your potassium and your magnesium and your nitrogen for protein, which is the most prevalent molecule in your body except for water. So all of this stuff you're made out of and that you need to function is coming from protein and minerals from soil versus energy, which is just these high energy carbon bonds in carbs and fats. So yeah, when I talk about energy, I'm really just interchangeably talking about carbs or fats. Although in the book, we do kind of break it down into the differences there, because there are some major league differences in how your body stores those or how you have to deal with those in your body.
Okay, so for simplicity, right? It sounds like we're eating too much energy, and maybe in pursuit of the protein, right? In pursuit of the nitrogen, things that are what is building, repairing, maintaining our body. And as a result, you get, you know, insulin resistance and all that, where you have way too much energy. But I think it was Sean Baker that said it. He said he believes that obesity is actually being nutrient starved, right? But like energy or calorie rich. And so that's a really fascinating way to think about it. Nobody really talks about this. You know, it's an interesting way to think about nutrition, I feel like, and food.
Right. This is basically protein or nutrient dilution. So we have studies that show that humans are pretty much going to eat until they get enough protein and until they get enough minerals, especially sodium and calcium. So you have a hunger for protein and you have a hunger for minerals, and you're going to eat until you get them. And everybody's getting enough of those. But the problem is you have to go through a whole bunch of refined carbs and fats to get that protein and minerals in the modern food supply. You know what I mean? So like if you just went outside and killed an animal and ate the whole thing, you pretty much have everything you need. But if you go to the food court in the mall and you need 150 grams of protein, you know, you gotta eat a lot of, you gotta eat a lot of crap.
Yeah. How many packages? Walk by the Asian restaurant and get a lot of samples.
How many, you know, things of ramen do you have to eat before you get enough protein to not be hungry? So this protein dilution is real, and it's a huge disaster. And the entire human food supply is so diluted with sugar, flour, and oil that you're literally forced to overeat energy in order to get the protein and minerals that you need to survive. And so with this PE diet concept, we just flip that on its head, and it's like, okay, now you eat to get the protein and minerals first, and then you just backfill the energy on the other side if you're still starving to death.
So what does that look like? I've heard you mention whole animals a lot. It's like a piece of meat, right? It's fill up on that, then, you know, figure out how much fat you're eating maybe. What can like the average person do that? I know you come from maybe like more of a weight loss background, and it seems like everybody's trying to control their weight or mitigate it. So like, what would you recommend just a typical person that's maybe not trying to lose 50 pounds, but just wants to maybe optimize for lean muscle, right? And just like a clean, balanced approach to diet.
Yeah. So for me, it's all about every time you eat, you're highlighting a protein or you're targeting a protein. Every meal, every snack, it's like, okay, I'm eating to get protein. So your breakfast is steak and eggs, and your lunch is a salad with a bunch of meat on it. And for dinner, you eat a steak the size of your head. And the protein is a star. Every meal, every snack, it's like, where's the protein? And basically, you're going to get enough fat along for the ride, and you're going to get enough minerals and nutrients, which tend to follow protein as well. Mm-hmm. So then fine-tuning the energy is a lot easier to do once you've gotten your nutrient hunger out of the way. You know what I mean? If I am just eating ramen, I know I need to eat more, but I don't know if it's because I didn't get enough protein or if I'm really still hungry for energy or did I get enough calcium and sodium? I don't know. I'm just eating more, right? I'm just going to eat the whole dozen donuts because I'm still hungry. But if you eat your pound of salmon and then sit back and say, okay, am I still really hungry? Well, when you have that much protein and nutrient density, maybe you're not hungry at all. Maybe you just tap into stored body fat for any exercise you're doing or other energy needs. Or maybe you just eat, you know, an apple or a little bit more energy of some sort if you still have this energy hunger. So this approach is all about hitting the protein mineral side first so that you can be more in tune with, are you really hungry for energy or not? Which we don't really ever get to do in the modern food environment because, you know, you ate your cereal for breakfast and all you know is 3 hours later you're starving. Mm-hmm. And is that really an energy hunger? Probably not, because cereal is really energy dense and that, you know, that was hundreds of calories. But 3 hours later, you're hungrier than you were before you even ate. And so, you know, there are all these things that you have to worry about when you're just eating energy. And we're trying to kind of get that off the table by hitting the protein and minerals first and then worrying about energy second.
Yeah. And what I've noticed is, and this is leads to the next question of what are the ranges? Because that's what everyone wants to know. And I know it's hard to answer because everyone's different goals. But in my tracking, it seemed like I thought I was eating more protein than I was. Then I tracked it for a little bit. I was probably hitting like the 20% range. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to try to hit 35%. Let's just see what that looks like. You're not hungry for anything, at least in my case, when I'm eating 35% of my calories from protein. And that does end up being a good amount of fat still, right? So where do you kind of fall in the spectrum personally? And what have you seen in maybe clients? Like, I feel like more than 50% protein would be really hard to do. Is that something you're seeing people do or?
I'm only seeing people hit 50% if they're really aggressively, you know, aiming for fat loss. But you will see 50% as kind of an upper end of protein percentage for people who are really leveraging a protein sparing modified fast. A lot of physique competitors dieting down will be at right around 50% protein by calories. So that's like a high end, super aggressive fat loss kind of strategy. And then, you know, personally, for kind of maintenance, I'm right at about 30% protein by calories. And if you look at worldwide hunter-gatherer macronutrient estimates, the average is 33% protein by calories, which is a really sweet maintenance zone if you want to be super lean. And let's face it, that's the goal of everybody out there, is to get the highest lean mass at the lowest fat mass. Whether you know it or not, that is your goal. That's everyone's goal. That should be your goal. That should be your goal for health and aesthetics and looking good naked. And that's honestly really is downstream from getting protein higher and energy lower.
So what's the rest though? Where do you fall on kind of carb spectrum? Is it like, do you recommend a very low carb diet? I mean, what about keto? Like, I mean, 30% wouldn't be keto, but the rest is fat. And I've noticed that when I eat this way where I'm mostly carnivore and I do 35% protein, I'm in ketosis like immediately after I eat, even if I eat a bunch of protein, which a lot of people in keto would be like, oh, too much protein, you know? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, okay. As far as the carb fat spread, I think it's highly individualized. And I think there's some very real mitochondrial differences that we just haven't figured out yet. So like, for example, if you look at worldwide hunter-gatherers again, and you look at how much carbs versus how much fat they eat and how much plant foods versus how much animal foods they ate, it's just this completely linear shift with your latitude. Like hunter-gatherers at the equator eat 50% plants and 50% animals. Hunter-gatherers way up at the high latitudes are eating, you know, 90% animal and 10% plant. And you just see this very smooth spectrum with latitude. And a lot of very real physiology happens with the latitude that your ancestors were at for the past 50,000 years. I mean, look at skin color, right? I'm this pale, pasty white. If I try to live on the equator, I will get multiple skin cancers. Like I'm going to get burned over and over. I will get basal cell carcinomas. It's just a matter of time. And that's because I'm literally trying to live at the wrong latitude. If a really dark skinned, you know, African-American who for the past 50,000 years, their ancestor were on the equator, if they try to live way up here where I do in Seattle, they're going to have vitamin D deficiency that could affect bone health. It's a really real thing. So there's this latitude that you're programmed to be optimal at. And guess what? That's also the fat carb spread your ancestors had for the past 50,000 years. And that's also, you know, maybe what your mitochondrial wiring diagram is, your mitochondrial DNA, which is, you know, these different haplogroups that we look at mitochondrial haplogroups, and you can see where people spread over the globe, right? And we know that the more northern haplogroups have this different wiring pattern, and they might be more optimized for using different transport chain functions. You know, maybe they're more tuned for carbs, maybe other groups are more tuned for fat. And I think we don't know enough about this yet. And I think that's why there are some people who do the very best on ultra low fat, ultra high carb diets, you know what I mean? Like these, you know, Kenyan ultra marathoners who are eating these insanely high carb diets are doing great. And then you've got some people who are literally eating 100% animal foods and no plants at all, and they're just doing fantastic. So I think I'm a little more agnostic on the fat carb spread. I think you have to figure it out for yourself. I think everyone's genetically different. I see some people who, when they have a really high fat percent, they're in this deeper ketosis all the time, and they can just be thinner and they're not as hungry. Yeah. But I see other people who are always starving for a little bit of carbohydrate. And when they try to do zero carb, they have to eat like 50 sticks of butter just to get satiety, and they end up being over fat. When if they just had, you know, 100 grams of carbs or something, maybe they'd be leaner. So in the book, our, you know, our approach is, you know, maybe 100 grams of carbs a day, see how it goes. You could eat less or more, just depending on what works for you. I don't think zero is optimal for a lot of people, but everybody needs to be eating fewer carbs than the standard American diet. That's for sure.
Yeah. And is it the protein that looks like it's the 30% range and all the different hunter-gatherer groups at the different, maybe like the Inuit would eat more protein just because they're eating more meat, but is it pretty constant around that 30% range?
No, there's quite a bit of variability. So you'll see like the Samane who eat almost like they're, you know, down at 10 or 11% fat, and they have about a 21 or 22% protein diet. So versus the Inuit, which is higher. And so there's a pretty good variation depending, again, mostly on latitude and plant versus animal makeup of the diet. So there's a spread on protein as well. And it does appear that the more plant-based and more equatorial you are, the lower your protein percent versus the Inuit, you know, have this basically DNA mutation that allows them to eat tons of protein without screwing up gluconeogenesis. You know what I mean? So they can actually get, they can function better on really, really, really high protein diets. So I think the actual protein percent is also kind of varying with genetics, and you kind of have to figure out what's best for you.
If I'm trying to lose weight, the average person that wants to lose 20%, or in fact, Brent, maybe you should ask some questions here. Like,
yeah.
For someone like Brent, why don't you maybe diagnose?
I'm formulating a lot of stuff here. So I've tried a bunch of different ways, but some of the stuff that's interesting that you've been saying that's really been resonating with me is I struggle with understanding where to get my sources of science from. So like, Colin will tell me go 100% carnivore, and I know he knows what he's talking about. And then somebody else will tell me, "Whoa, that's crazy! You need some carbs or whatever." So it's just the idea that there is something connected to kind of your ancestry, like where you came from, where you actually existed, is connected to your diet. Solves a lot of that in my brain with the why is everybody talking about different things? Why is this person saying go vegan? Why is this person saying go carnivore? Like this kind of stuff. It's nice to marry that in my brain and understand it a little bit. And currently I'm in a spot where I'm keto, but when you said somebody who needs to eat 50 sticks of butter to feel like they're full, instead of butter, it's cheese. So I eat too much cheese, and I should not be eating cheese. I know I shouldn't be eating cheese, but I constantly am hungry once I break my fast. If I'm fasted, I'm fine. But as soon as I start eating, it's like crazy. So anyway, that was just kind of random anecdotal there, but I just wanted to say that that really put a lot of this in perspective for me.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. I mean, I think meal frequency, protein percent, mixture of fat versus carbs, plant versus animal, I think a lot of that is super individualized. The problem is we have no clue what is best for who, and you kind of have to figure it out. But I'm highly carnivorous. You know, steak and eggs is my favorite food. I'm way over on the low carb, keto, paleo, carnivore side of the spectrum. And I've got high carb, low fat vegan patients who are in amazing health and who could basically kill all three of us with their bare hands, no problem. And that really, I know that we get kind of dogmatic where we're like, you have to be carnivore. You know, plants are trying to kill you. But the reality is that there's always somebody out there who's on the exact opposite of what you think would be great for everybody. And they're doing, you know, even better than you are. So I definitely have patients who are vegan, who are eating 100% plants. They're eating low protein percentages by my way of thinking. And they're maybe getting, you know, half their protein from soy or something that I personally think is a bad idea. And they're doing great. So, you know, the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know it all. And what I try to do is honestly spend most of my time following other groups to see what's working for people on the other side of the fence. You know what I mean? So I'm following these vegan bodybuilders who are way more ripped and jacked than I'll ever be, for sure. I know a lot of it's genetics, but I also know that, you know, different things work for different people. So it's kind of good to get outside your echo chamber every once in a while, you know?
Well, for someone like Brent, what would be some questions or things to test? Like, where would he start? I mean, he's been on almost every show we've done. He has more knowledge than the average person about almost all these things, right? But so, Brent, why don't you just real quickly explain, what are you doing? Because I'm curious as myself. Are you like optimizing protein? Are you still doing like low protein, a lot of fat? I mean, too much cheese, it sounds like.
A good way to describe this would probably be lazy keto, where I'm still allowing myself to do kind of the board eating as long as it fits inside my eating window. But I am sticking to keto. I've got test strips in the, you know, I'm peeing on the strips to make sure I'm still in ketosis, even though I don't think that matters a whole lot, especially if I'm fasting. I'm going to be in ketosis anyways. So that's kind of where I'm at. I need to be more structured and go towards more protein. I break my fast almost every day with either a ribeye or a New York strip or something like that. So I'm eating steak pretty much every day as my main meal. And that's kind of where I am. I lost a lot of weight years ago on a diet that was a mix of paleo and just low calorie, where because you're low calorie, you tend to be low carbs since they're so calorie dense. But I lost a lot of weight that way. Intermittent fasting has worked really well for me. I haven't broke past that barrier other than the intermittent fasting. It's hard for me to stick with keto. It was just something that I did because I was bored eating during a lockdown kind of thing. Right. So,
well, okay. My advice to most people is to pull every lever out there to a moderate degree. You know what I mean? Every single human and animal study on fat loss that's ever been done shows that higher protein percent is always better, period. Mm-hmm. All of them, every study. Like, you can't find a study in the medical literature where a higher protein percent was not better. So step one for me, crank your protein percent up, you know, reasonably high. I'll give a pass to those people who are doing, you know, medical grade keto, who, you know, their goal is seizure control or a neurologic problem or for mental health reasons, they want a deep ketosis at all times. Okay. I'll let those people stick with their barely enough protein to survive diet. But for most people whose goal is just fat loss or aesthetics or that kind of thing, then for me, step one is cranking the protein percent up as high as you can. So that's a lever you can pull, higher protein percentage. The next lever you can pull is low carb. And I think a lot of people in our society are overeating carbs. So that's a lever I highly recommend. But then the question is, how low is too low? Because if you try to, if you're eating, you know, 20 grams of carb today from salad and you're like, wow, if I could just get down to zero by not eating salad, then I'm going to have even more success. Probably not true for most people. There's a point there where these low nutrient density foods are actually really beneficial. If you look at the old school bodybuilders from the 60s and the 70s, they would eat nothing but white fish and then just snack on celery and cucumbers and broccoli all day long. They were just eating a crap ton of super low energy density veggies because you do get a teensy tiny little satiety benefit from it that's undeniable. And so I don't know that zero is optimum. So you just want to moderately pull the high percentage lever. You want to moderately pull the low carb lever. Next up is the low fat lever. I hate to say it, but if you go from full fat plain Greek yogurt to 2% or 1% or non-fat plain Greek yogurt, you're probably going to get the same satiety for lower calories. You know, I'm probably not allowed to use the C word on this podcast, but you're literally going to get the same satiety for lower calories. And that's what every single bodybuilder and bikini model and fitness model and aesthetic athlete on earth is doing. And they're pretty freaking successful. And we could take a page from their playbook. So you want to pull the high protein percentage lever. You want to pull the low carb lever. You want to pull the low fat lever. You don't want to pull any of those too hard. You don't want fat less than 30% of your calories. You probably don't want carbs under at least 50 grams, maybe 100 grams, because you're getting those trace carbs in your veggies are really beneficial. The satiety per calorie is so low. It's amazing, right? So don't get rid of the salad or whatever. And then you want to pull the exercise lever. If you're like, okay, if I could just jog 3 hours a day instead of 2 hours a day, you're not going to get any, your return on investment is negative. But if you literally never exercise, just doing a set of push-ups and pull-ups every day is going to be huge. Just jumping rope for 5 minutes is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. Just going for a walk around the neighborhood once a day is going to be massive. So you pull the resistance exercise lever, you pull the cardio lever, you pull the general activity lever, you throw in some sleep, you throw in some sunlight. You're basically trying to moderately pull every lever you've got. And once you add those all together, I think that's probably where you're going to get your best fat loss. And I too many people in our community grab one lever with both hands and just snap it off at the base. They're like, I'll just never eat a plant again because it's pure toxicity. Or I'll never eat a carb. They're 100% unnecessary. Your body will make all you ever need. Yeah, but you know, like your sympathetic nervous system tone is higher at all times when you do that. And your cortisol is higher. And it's a stressor to your body 24/7. And is that really optimal? And the extremes are never optimal. All or none is never the right way to go. It's always something in between. So I know I'm not really answering your question, but I'm just saying pull each lever a little bit. You know, figure out what works best for you, but you really want to be shotgunning this thing and basically doing a little bit of everything, because otherwise you're leaving money on the table. And just don't get fixated on one thing. In the low carb world, we just get fixated on carbs, and it's probably negative return on investment after a certain point.
Yeah, totally.
What is clear is that processed sugar is bad. That is one that's across the board, every diet, every way of looking at it.
Yep.
Like if you eat sugar, it's bad. That's one of the things that, and therefore that kind of leads to the low carb thing. So even though it was a general answer, and obviously you don't know what goes on for me personally, I think that I got a lot out of that and the listeners would get a lot out of that too, because it makes total sense that you can just adjust things in one way and see what happens. So
what would you do though? So like if you listen to that and you're like thinking in your head, okay, what are things I'm going to like do tomorrow?
Because I would like to poop better, I would probably pull the lever of the cheese, get it out of there, and go ahead and let the carb level come up a little bit higher on things like, I don't know, maybe a seaweed salad or something like, if I need to eat rice or something like that, that's where I would kind of pull it from.
What about protein? You think you're adequate in the protein?
I'm not tracking my macros enough. So the other lever, literally, I don't know, you might have seen me moving around on my screen. I went to fatsecret.com and reactivated my account while you guys were talking.
What is that?
It's MyFitnessPal, but not as leaky with your data or whatever. So that's I reactivated the account and I'm like putting in what I'm planning to eat as soon as I break the fast like that. So that's another thing that I need to do is actually look at this and keep myself accountable.
Oh, well, one thing I just want to add to that is I talk about protein all the time, protein. The PE diet, though, to be honest, everybody's already eating enough protein. The whole PE diet approach is really just how can I eat what I'm eating now and make every single thing slightly lower in carbs and slightly lower in fat? You know what I mean? Like you're eating a bunch of cheese. Okay, eat low fat cheese. if you went to my refrigerator right now and looked inside it, literally the only cheese you'll see there is low-fat cheese. I know this is like totally forbidden in the low-carb community. Like, you literally look at the cheese I have in my fridge. It's low-fat. It's reduced-fat cheese. And the only difference between that and full-fat cheese is it's made from skim milk instead of whole milk. That's it. They didn't add any carbs. There's no cornstarch or sugar or anything in it. It's literally just fermented skim milk instead of fermented full-fat milk. And I get the same amount of protein. I get the same amount of minerals. The only thing I'm not getting the same amount of is fat, saturated fat. If my goal is fat loss, maybe that's beneficial. And so you're looking at everything you eat and you're like, how could I shave off grams of carbs and grams of fat to get this a higher PE ratio? Like, instead of eating bacon, maybe you eat center cut bacon or ham or Canadian bacon, which is lean as hell, or turkey bacon, which is like 5 grams of protein, 1 gram of fat. So like, instead of eating, I mean, I love eggs. This is one of my favorite foods. But if you're really cutting aggressively, maybe you eat 2 eggs and 2 egg whites. You know what I mean? A little bit higher PE ratio. Instead of eating the fattest grain-fed ribeye with all the fat on it, maybe you get grass-fed, or maybe you get a sirloin, or maybe you trim the fat off of that. Like, now you're eating like flank steak or sirloin from a grass-fed cow, and it's way higher PE ratio. You know, instead of putting heavy whipping cream in your coffee, maybe you put in half and half, or maybe just milk, or maybe skim milk, or maybe almond milk, which is like no calories. So you're just constantly trying to say, how can I shave off grams of fat and grams of carbs to give myself the same protein, the same minerals, the same nutrient density, and just less energy, just less
same satiety, right? Same satiety.
Yeah. So what you're trying to do is get higher satiety per calorie. The secret to all of this is satiety per calorie. Like, if you could eat one little thing that was only 100 calories, but you got a whole day's worth of satiety out of it,
yeah,
you'd be at the finish line. You'd be done. You won.
Right.
The whole secret is not being hungry. And so you have to ask yourself, how much long-term satiety did I get per calorie that was in this food? You know, for the amount of energy I got. If you're eating refined carbs and fats together, if you're eating a dozen Krispy Kreme donuts, it's literally negative satiety per calorie. It's, you know, it's 2,000 calories, and 3 hours later, you're starving out of your mind. You're literally hungrier than if you just didn't eat all day. Mm-hmm. And so the refined carbs and fats together are literally negative satiety. But you eat low-fat cheese made from skim milk, you're actually probably going to get the same satiety that you did from the fattest cheese you could find at lower energy intake. You know what I mean? That's kind of a win. And like, this is what all the bodybuilders and the bikini models and the fitness people are doing. Follow some of these people around. These people's job is to get the highest lean mass at the lowest fat mass. That's their job. They've nailed this. None of them are pure carnivores. Well, maybe, okay, a couple of them. But most of them are not. They're eating the hell out of these low energy density vegetables like cucumbers and tomatoes and peppers and onions and mushrooms, all this stuff. They're eating a ton of that. They're also not eating, you know, the fattest cut of meat you can find. They're eating like, you know, sirloin and fish and skinless poultry. And they're just constantly trying to eat the same stuff, but shaving off grams of carbs and fats. And that, honestly, I think that's the most successful thing to do. You're like, how could I make this less carb and less fat? Of course, that's not a very sexy title for a book. So like, like, if I wrote a book called How to Sort of Be Half-Ass Low Carb and Low Fat at All Times and kind of watch your calories, but really don't think about calories. Like, yeah, that's not that interesting.
So yeah, these are all great things. I think the one point you made about, you know, Aristotle called it the golden mean. Everything in nature kind of has, you know, it's the yin and the yang. It's somewhere in the middle that is the golden mean, that is the right dose. And the problem with nutrition in humans is, like you said, something as simple as skin color or where your ancestors used to live and where, how much sun was shown then also determined what foods you ate. There was more fruit at the equator. There was like almost no fruit, no plants up north, right? So there's a lot of variables here. It's hard to make these hard and fast rules. But if we're thinking about this And it seems like generally most people do better with lower carb, at least if we're trying to look good, right? Like if you don't care about looking good, you can pretty much optimize this in a different way. It seems like 30 to 30% protein is probably good if you're trying to look good. And then it seems like you fill in the rest with fat. But if let's say I have 100 grams of carbs in a day, I have my 35% protein, whatever that is, and then I have the rest in fat, is it better or more optimal for weight loss to maybe throttle back the fat? Or is there's probably a diminishing return where too many carbs leads to fat gain, but if your insulin's under control, then maybe the carbs don't affect you as much, whereas eating the pure energy from the fat might go more directly to fat cells. So how do you think about that equation?
Okay, there's a couple of factors there. First of all, for some people, carbohydrate is a ergogenic, like they have better workout.
What does that mean?
It means that you perform better. Like if you eat some carbohydrate and then you just have tons of energy and you go out and deadlift your car, or you can like do a feel a massive workout. So if your performance for working out and exercising goes up with a little bit of carbohydrate, okay, right then and there, you need to partition more of your energy calories from fat into carbohydrate. The other thing is, if you're always just at zero carbs, you have this sort of carb hunger that people get. And if that's making you eat more fat and protein in an attempt to fill this carb hunger, you're probably better off throwing a little more of your energy calories on the carb side. The other thing is that fat has a thermic effect of like zero. So when you eat fat, it just passively goes straight into your fat cells. It takes no energy to do this. Every bit of fat in your body, almost all of it, statistically speaking, came from dietary fat. It's a real uphill battle to turn carbs into fat. You have to supersaturate your liver with glycogen, supersaturate all your muscles with glycogen, and only then can you convert any carbs into fat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you're on a low-carb diet, you're going to have to eat at least 500 grams of carbs before you have any de novo lipogenesis going on. Wow. Now, your average American is super saturated with carbs every freaking minute of their day.
So, yeah, and they don't exercise. The glycogen is full. Yeah.
Right. They eat one donut and they are going to convert carbs into fat. They're constantly doing that. That's why they have fatty liver. It's like de novo lipogenesis is a daily thing. For somebody who's low-ish carb, you're not going to turn a lot of carbs into fat. Now, eating that carbohydrate will displace fat oxidation in an isocaloric way. Like for every calorie of carb you eat, you displace fat oxidation. But if that makes you a little bit less hungry or give you a little satiety benefit or give you a little bit better workout, it might be worth it. So that's why you might want to spend some of your energy calories on carbs. The problem with carbs is a lot of people get downstream hunger from carbohydrate. You eat carbs, your blood sugar goes way up, and then it crashes. And like 3 hours later, you're just way hungrier than if you hadn't eaten any carbs at all. And so that's why I like to have a really low carbohydrate frequency. In the book, I'm recommending people just maybe eat carbs once a day and maybe backload them all into the evening. Because then you're less affected by this downstream hunger effect that's real for some people. Like once they start eating carbs, you know, like 3 hours later, they're starving no matter what. So you got to be strategic with carbs. Fat is super passive. Fat is extremely passive. It takes, you know, 12 hours for it even to end up in your fat cells or anywhere. It takes forever to be processed. It's not doing anything for you right away. It's not giving you any instant energy. Nobody's eating a brick of fat right before they run a 100-meter dash or anything like that. It's just slowly, passively ending up in your fat cells. So it's not really improving anyone's performance or really doing anything dramatic for anybody's hunger levels at any given time. So fat is like this passive thing where, yeah, you got to get energy from it and you need some. But you don't have to be as strategic with it. It's the carb side that you have to be super strategic with. You have to be like, okay, is this going to make me hungrier later? Or is this going to make me less hungry right now or less hungry later? And, you know, how much glycogen do I have in my liver or in my muscles? And, you know, what's this going to do to my sympathetic versus parasympathetic nervous system? And there's just so much more to worry about because it dramatically changes your whole body metabolism, you know? So there are a lot of factors, and I talk about it a lot in the book, and I don't have a really great answer, but you're right. Everybody needs to eat less carbs. Everybody needs to think about what the carbs are doing to them. And you just kind of want to treat it like maybe a drug almost, you know, it's really nuanced.
But fat then, so like we have keto stalls, right? Where people, they're fat loss stalls. And then I think about like Brent, for example, I'm just thinking like he's eating a lot of fat and maybe he could actually do better with like finding what his carb ceiling is. And then maybe that could do some of the things you're talking about to kind of like reignite that fat loss. Like what, there was a tweet, something, I think it was a picture you did, a graphic, you like doing those graphics about like, you know, if you stalled on keto, this is probably why or whatever. Can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Right. So typically my advice to people who are stalled on keto is to get a higher protein percentage and eat less fat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My way of thinking is, you know, if you get carbs out of the way, it really comes down to fat balance. If you eat more grams of fat than you burn a day, you're not going to lose any weight. So then you have to either eat less fat or exercise more. So the first thing you might want to try is eating less fat. Of course, if that's going to make you hungry, you have to eat more something. So that would be a little bit more carb or maybe some protein. And then, of course, you always could exercise more. That's not a terrible idea either. I get some pushback from the super high fat keto people who are like, well, if you're eating too much protein, your ketosis isn't as deep. And then you don't get this magical satiety from deep ketosis. And okay, I will admit there are some people out there who just, they eat like 80, 90% of their calories from fat. And they are in such a deep ketosis at all times that in addition to not having a seizure, they're also just never really hungry. And so there are some edge case people out there who need this super high fat percentage. But I think for a lot of other people, a really good place to start is to try to eat less fat. And if you're going to be hungry doing that, then maybe more protein or even a little bit more liberal on the carb side.
But what range for protein? I mean, it's like we talk about 50% is like kind of upper tier. I mean, and that was the other thing that's kind of stuck in my head. I'm trying to visualize the meals. You know, even if I had a ribeye when I eat the whole thing, like you're going to end up eating most of your calories from fat, it seems like. If you're doing lower carb and you're doing like a moderate amount of protein. So like, I guess the question is like, how do you modulate those, right? Because it seems like you fill it with either fat or carbs, but you're trying to balance the two, or you just do more protein. So someone like Brent could probably do doubles protein. It probably would help with satiety and probably fat loss. I assume that with him, right? I tried doubling my protein when I was still hungry doing mostly a carnivore diet. So where do we run into problems with protein though? I know like Saladino was talking about urea issues and things like that, and rabbit starvation is a thing, but I just feel like most people are never going to, that's not going to happen today unless you're eating just like straight chicken breast all day or something.
Well, I think that it's really hard to eat quote unquote too much protein. That's extremely difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think the low hanging fruit there is to just maybe choose leaner protein sources. You know what I mean? Like if you're eating a ton of bacon, which let's face it, you're taking the fattest part of the very fattest animal on earth that's been artificially fattened, and you're just eating that. And it's, you know, 3 grams or 4 grams of fat to 2 grams of protein. It's a crap ton of fat. So, you know, maybe you eat ribeye, which is equal grams of protein and fat, or maybe you eat lean ground beef, which is 2 grams of protein to 1 gram of fat, or maybe you crank it up to poultry or skinless poultry or fish, which might be 5 grams of protein to 1 gram of fat. Somewhere in there, it's going to be too lean, right? If you just try to eat whey powder out of a bowl with a spoon and then some egg whites on top, it's going to be too much protein and not enough fat, and that's just going to be a massive fail. So just like everything else, you can't just crank the PE diet up ratio all the way to infinity. You have to take where you're at and just move it up a little bit. So like instead of bacon, okay, ribeye, or maybe you said ribeye, lean ground beef or sirloin, or, you know, you're just trying to tweak it up a little bit. The other thing, you know, fat loss, long-term, meaningful, successful, permanent fat loss is literally just a war of grams every single day. You're literally just trying to eat 50 less grams of carb or fat every day. That's your whole mindset. If you eat 100 grams of fat less a day, end of a year, you're going to lose 50 pounds. I mean, it's just like you're just trying to shave off a couple grams of or, you know, maybe a few dozen grams of carb or fat energy every day and yet still have the same satiety.
Are there strategies for doing that? Like, have you dealt with patients that are more on the obese side, right? That, like, what are some other strategies? Obviously drinking water, but are there other things?
Definitely. Okay. The first one is exercise. Like, you can solve any of these issues by just throwing in a crap ton of exercise, just throw in more intensity, duration, frequency. You know, if you just, you know, run for your life on your treadmill for an hour a day, you're just going to burn so many more calories that it's just easier for you. Mm-hmm. And that's basically energy throughput, right? So let's say you just lay in bed all day long and try not to even move. Like, you don't blink, you barely breathe. You could possibly only expend 1400 calories the whole day, right? And that's your absolute basal metabolic rate. It is so hard to keep your calories right at 1400. You know, if you eat one cracker, you've blown it, right? You just got fatter. Mm-hmm. Versus if you go out and play soccer for 3 hours, if you have a soccer tournament every day and you're just sprinting as hard as you can for hours and you're spending, that's a whole day's worth of energy expenditure right there. So you're spending another 1300 calories running around the soccer field for a couple hours. Now you're flying your calorie plane so high off the ground that you can just fly over a mountain range of like a dozen Krispy Kremes and not even notice it. It's not even going to be a blip on your caloric radar. It's so easy to stay thin when you have a huge energy throughput. If you're doubling your basal metabolic rate in activity every day, you just walk around leaner. We have a ton of studies that support this. The higher your energy throughput, the thinner you're going to be effortlessly. So, and a ton of my hardcore keto fails, their energy output every day is like nothing. I mean, like, they sit in a position of least energy, like barely engaging any muscles in their neck or back. They stand in a position of least energy, like their posture is horrible. Like, they're not even engaging their muscles when they stand. Like, they might drive through the drive-through and not get out of their car. They sit at a desk all day long. These people I don't know if it's an addiction to comfort or being afraid to be even slightly uncomfortable in any way, but they don't expend any energy, and then they're flying their calorie plane 3 feet off the ground at Mach 5, and they're just gonna, you know, like, they eat this one cracker and it's over. Yeah. So that is one thing you want to do, is just radically crank up your energy throughput as high as you can reasonably stand without killing yourself. You know, you don't want to do Ironman training because, you know, chronic cardio is bad for you. Your testosterone goes down, your cortisol is high, you just kind of wreck yourself. But the more active you can be, the easier it's going to be for you. The other thing is getting uncomfortable in other ways. Being too cold. If you can just underdress and be in a cold environment all day long where you're like slightly uncomfortable, you're spending a lot of energy to get warmer. You're creating more brown fat. You're browning your fat. You're expending energy. You really want to push yourself way out of your comfort zone because you're burning a lot more energy. You want to be too hot. You want to be too cold. You want to be super uncomfortable. You want to stand all day long. You want to walk around on a bed of nails. Well, okay, you don't really want to do that. But you know what I'm saying? You want to push yourself because you're just expending more calories 24/7. And so those are other things you can do. In addition to trying to constantly shave off grams of fat or grams of carbs from your diet, you can just constantly be trying to expend more energy. And that works pretty well. You know, wear the cold vest all day long or something like that. I've never really done that. But you know what I'm saying? It's these people who the thermostat's always at 72 and they barely move. And even when they stand, you can tell they're engaging no muscles in their body. You want to be the exact opposite. You want to put the highest tension you possibly can in every muscle of your body every day, and maybe every chance you get. You want to engage your muscles maximally. You want to push yourself really hard. You want to push your cardio system. You want to push muscular tension. You want to be extremely cold or hot. that's just one other thing you can do.
Yeah. And it sounds like, though, a lot of these other, I mean, if you're talking about those that are more overweight than even what today is considered overweight, like that's part of the reason they're like that is because they're not doing that.
Right.
So as far as nutrition goes, though, it sounds like what I've heard from some people that are doing carnivore that like to include salad, it seems like a lot of these high water content vegetables and maybe even certain fruits give a certain satiety effect where it kind of fills your gut up and just like maybe makes you not as hungry. So you don't eat as much of the energy. That seems like kind of a strategy to do. It's just like you mentioned, cucumbers, peppers, these things are like very low calorie and carb, mm-hmm. but they take up volume in the gut, you know? And see, it seems like that could be a strategy as well.
That's a huge strategy. And that is a strategy that almost all of your aesthetic athletes are using, and they all swear by it, and they're getting real results. And so I think that's an excellent strategy. It's like every time you can eat something that has high satiety for low energy, you're really, really winning. And that's why I tell people every day, try to eat these foods that have insanely high satiety per calorie. What foods are those? Salad. You get a giant bowl the size of your head and eat a massive salad with the lowest calorie dressing you can find. The satiety per calorie of that is off the charts. Like, you won't find anything with higher satiety per calorie. Mm-hmm. Or something like low-fat plain Greek yogurt. You can eat 2 pounds of that and it's only 500 calories. You're not hungry for the rest of your damn life. Wow. Like, you can't mm-hmm. even eat that much. And I know we're not supposed to eat carbs, but, you know, there's so many carbs that the secret to carbs is eating low carb carbs, right? So you want to eat the carbs, the highest satiety per calorie. Strawberries, you can eat 4 pounds of strawberries. That's 12 cups of strawberries, and it's only 100 net grams of carbs. Mm-hmm. And you know how not hungry you're going to be after that? And if you're a zero carb carnivore who's just been eating butter and cubed up raw animal fat or whatever to try to not be hungry for the past 6 months, and then you get to eat 4 pounds of strawberries, I mean, like, the satiety you get from that, the satiety per calorie you're going to get from that is probably incalculable with existing technology. So I think the secret to carbs and plant foods is eating these foods that have the high satiety for almost no energy at all. And I think it might be a mistake to leave those off your program.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's my approach has been, I'm trying to explore more of a flexible carnivore as a way to, because I just enjoy food. Like, I enjoy certain foods, and that's a part of life, right? But also as an intro for more people to get more to an animal-based way of eating, which I think is the most ancestrally appropriate way to eat. And so I'm trying to explore that more. But man, there's people that like will comment on my YouTube videos, this isn't carnivore. Like, even when I explain, like, I know this isn't carnivore. I'm doing it for a reason. This is my logic behind it. It's like you get so much of that dogma in all nutrition.
It's true. But okay, look, I love the carnivores. I'm not trying to be a huge pain in their butts. I'm mostly carnivore myself. Like, I'm sure I get 80% of my calories from animal foods. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a couple things that I push back against. Some people are like, well, don't ever eat all these plant foods because they're toxic and plants are trying to kill you. I like that. I don't care. I'm trying to be anti-fragile. I'm going to intentionally eat these plant toxins make my body detoxify them. And it's going to be adapt or die. I'm like telling my body, okay, you're going to have to detoxify this celery because that's what I'm eating today. So this is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I see that as some form of maybe exercise for my system. You know what I mean? This is a hormetic stress that's probably good for you, probably just like exercise, right? We're not like, well, I'm never going to jog because do you not have any idea how high the shear forces are on your femur when you jog? That's, this is completely bad. And here are some studies that show that how high these forces are. I don't care. It's really good for me. I'm going to just jog harder next time. You know what I mean? Sure. So I like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as reason to not eat these plant foods, right? Like, your ancestors were just like chewing on freaking tree bark or, you know, half the day, probably trying to get enough calories to survive. And so I think that there's something there that I see how we got there, right? All your super, super crap modern foods are from plants. They're all refined mm-hmm. plant garbage, all this like sugar, flour, oil crap. And so the carnivore thing really appeals to me. But at some point, I think we might have thrown the baby out with the bathwater on that one.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, there's no hunter-gatherer that would not have eaten plants. That's always the thing that like goes in my head. Like, even if they would have eaten only animals, it probably would have been for maybe a season or a period of time. And then when there's no animals to be found or they weren't successful hunting, do you think they would have just not eaten because they're worried about their fatigue, their physique or something? Like, it didn't even enter their consciousness to think about their body or how they looked or anything. It wasn't even like, that's a modern invention. And so I think mm-hmm. we always have to balance these different things out and just take a balanced approach. This is coming up on an hour. We really appreciate you being here. There is one final question. What is something that we didn't ask or that you think we should cover or that is like a big point on maybe all these topics? Or I mean, we covered quite a bit, so it might not even exist, but.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't really think of anything. I mean, this is great. I can't think of a thing. This is.
Excellent. Okay, great. I thought that was a good question, but.
that is a good question.
Where can people find you?
Well, I wrote a book with William Schufelt, who's another awesome guy. You guys should interview him too. The PE Diet, and you can buy that at thepediet.com. It's also on Amazon and iBooks, that kind of thing. I'm on Twitter at Ted Naiman. I'm on Instagram at Ted Naiman. I have a little Facebook group called Burn Fat, Not Sugar. Twitter is probably the best place to reach me. And the book is at thepediet.com.
What do you mean by burn fat, not sugar?
So the standard American is eating, 91 grams of protein a day, about 100 grams of fat a day, and then 323 grams of carbs a day, which is just like stupid, ridiculous, absolutely crazy, like nowhere close to any kind of ancestral anything. They're all refined. They all have like, we're only eating 10 grams of fiber a day or less. And so nobody ever burns any fat at all because we eat so many carbohydrates, right? You can store maybe 300 grams of glycogen in your muscles. But if you're not doing high intensity exercise, that never leaves your muscles. They just stay mm-hmm. full with this glycogen. So your average person has a room for 100 grams of glycogen in their liver, maybe once every 24 hours. And so, they're doing 0 minutes of high intensity exercise every day, which is the American average, never using muscle glycogen. They can store maybe 100 grams of carbs in their liver. And then any other carbs you eat after that is just displacing all your fat oxidation. So every bit of fat you eat just ends up being stored in your body and never burned. And every single American is gaining a pound a year, and we all end up 50 pounds overweight. And so burn fat, not sugar was kind of my initial way of saying you're just burning glucose all day long because of your insane carbohydrate intake. And that's why I come at all of this from a low carb direction, just because carbs are so abused in the standard American diet. In the modern food environment, we're just abusing carbs like crazy. It's just, average Americans eating carbohydrates 8 times a day. That's every 2 hours for a 16-hour eating window, over 300 grams. And the amount of carbage that we have going on is just ridiculous. And so that's where I came up with that.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. And all the links to everything will be in the show notes. Go get the book. I have it. It's great. It's actually easy because it's a lot of graphics, not a lot of reading. So I know people hear book and they're like, oh, another book to read. You could read like 50 pages in 20 minutes. So I definitely recommend people check that out. And maybe we'll have you on in the future. I really appreciate what you're doing. And thanks again.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.
Hey, everybody, Colin here. Thanks for listening to that show. I want to let you know about my newest podcast over at Escaping Fragility, a show about building a life for yourself, being safe, being secure, having a plan B, so that if this crazy world of 2020 continues or gets worse, which a lot of the numbers are suggesting it will, then you and your family will be protected. A lot of my content for my personal brand has been focused on giving people the knowledge the expertise, the skills, and just the awareness of some of the craziness that's going on so that they can protect themselves, so that they can fight back, so that they can be civilly disobedient, so that we can stymie the ever encroaching spread of government and of corporate and political agenda. If more citizens do not stand up, fight back, speak up, there's going to be nothing left to protect. And I don't like fear mongering, and I'm generally an optimistic person, but 2020 has stressed me out. At first it didn't, but then it did. When I really saw what was going on, when I read a little bit between the lines, and even now in July, the craziness is continuing and I don't see it letting up anytime soon. The masses are too easily manipulated. And so I'm more concerned what's going to happen in 2021 when the next flu season comes through and another coronavirus is weaponized. And then who knows what's going to happen? Travel restrictions, mandatory vaccines, chipped and prodded like cattle. People think it can't happen. They stick their head down, but they did in Mao's China. They did in Stalin's Russia. They did in Nazi Germany. And then it was too late. And who pays the price? It's always, always, always the citizens that are having faith and that are just hoping things get better. They're the ones that always pay the price. So the first thing we can do is protect ourselves and our family, have a plan B, have an escape option, and then we can help others. Head over to Colin.coach, get on the AM5 newsletter. You'll get all the shows every week. And you can also find me on YouTube and iTunes or Spotify or Google Play. Get prepared before it's too late.